This year, Halloween, for the first time in a long time, wears a mask over a very different kind of holiday. Like nearly all Christian holidays, including Easter, Christmas, and so on, Halloween, which was a shortened form of the Eve of All Hallows, or All Hallows Evening, or All Saints Day, it's a cover of much older pagan celebrations, comes from the Celtic celebration of Samhain, which means the end of summer, summer's end. It was one of the two great doorways in the Celtic year. They divided their year into a year of black and white, the light and the dark. At Beltane on May 1st, when summer began and planting season began and life and light began, and then what many feel was their most important festival, the one that happened at night on the Eve of Samhain. It was understood that what was magical about this most magical of days was that at this time, the veil, which separates the seen from the unseen, was lifted, and the kinds of spirits that we keep at bay during the year are brought to the surface, and we have a chance to know them. Modern psychologists might say we have a chance to integrate them, for these are profoundly psychological events going on. It was a night of glowing jack-o'-lanterns, magical from the start, bobbing for apples that they used to tell the future, tricks, treats, dressing in costumes, a night of ghost stories and seances, tarot cards would be read, also trying to tell the future. It was a night of power, and the power of the unseen spirits, the shadow side of the world that we'd been living in. A Jungian psychologist would rephrase this by saying that we're invited to confront the unpleasant shadow sides, the unexpressed parts of the world that are less obvious than the part that we live in. Usually that means that we live in positive images and sunlight and these sorts of things, accentuating the positive, and we just suppress bad thoughts and stay in denial. And then Halloween is a chance to move out of the denial. But on this night, the veil between layers of consciousness is lifted. At least it's lifted ritually if we want to participate, if we want to play. And we're given a kind of ritual permission to let the unconscious things become conscious, to try to become more whole. Now, you may be sitting here thinking, okay, that could be scary. And that may give you an appreciation for the kinds of costumes that have been associated with Halloween, because for centuries it has been seen as scary. These are the scary forces that we don't want in polite life. This is why Halloween is really so spooky, because it's trying to reach through the cartoons to let us confront the scary sides, the shadow sides, and that's spooky. Now, a lot of preachers love the chance like this to get all morbid, to delve into all the deep, suppressed, slimy things we carry around, and then to drag them out and whack you with them. You may have experienced this in church before. It's part of the sadism of the religion business. We say, have a really spooky Halloween, and then we smile. This year I've decided to do something different because the times are different this year. The times seem out of joint, as Shakespeare once put it. And there are signs that this may be a different kind of Halloween. Not a spooky Halloween, but a happy Halloween. So I want to use Halloween as a lens for looking at where we are today, and I decided to use what may seem like a very unrelated and far-fetched teaching aid, a symbol, to help be more clear about this. You've all seen it. It's the yin-yang symbol of ancient China. Most of you probably didn't know that the Celts knew Chinese philosophy. They didn't. They probably never heard of this. But all the best religions and philosophies are tools to try to help us understand who we are and how we're supposed to be living and what's going on. And sometimes it's useful and fertile to mix them, as I want to do this morning. This symbol, the yin-yang, represents the Chinese picture, in other words, one bright culture picture of what reality is life and what the human condition is life. So it's always worth looking at these. And the way they saw it is as a dynamic thing. The black circle around the outside is the boundary of everything. Everything is inside the circle. And inside the circle, as you can tell from those undulating shapes, there are two kinds of forces that move, one into the other and back into the first, kind of unendingly. There are the forces of what they called yin and yang. The yin force is sort of the dark force that is more passive, the force of shadows that moves down and so forth. The yang force is the more active force that moves up and is brighter. And it's an interplay. And there's a lot in this picture because they realize that neither the yin nor the yang forces are pure, because nothing in life is pure. That when these forces become their strongest, and you can see them each growing from little slivers to large bulbous forces, when they become their strongest, now you can see that they contain within them the seeds of their own undoing. They contain within them the seeds of the opposite, the seeds that they've suppressed. And sure enough, those seeds will be the next to grow as the dance continues and the other style of forces take over. And as they grow larger and more cocky and more confident, as we do, then you see that they too contain the seeds of their own undoing. It's really quite a profound picture of life and of the cosmic powers. Now, if you think about it, this is where ironies abound. If you were to ask, remembering this is a circle that never ends, this is always in motion, if you were then to say, all right, where's the weakest position to be in the circle? Well, the weakest position to be in is at the very height of your power, because you're done. And the strongest position to be in is this little teeny sliver that's just starting to blossom and grow. Christians will be reminded of Jesus' notion that the last shall go first and the first shall go last. And the ancient Taoists and Chinese who said, oh, we've been saying this for centuries. We have pictures of this. This is not new information. Back when Halloween was born, and when the yin-yang symbols were born too, I suspect, they were loaded in a little different way than they are today. Back then, I suppose, the white force, the yang force, was identified as good. Not just strong, but good, because it came with planting season. So it's the birth of new life and this stuff. And the yang, the yin force, the dark force, was the time when winter came, when the seeds were fallow, when nothing was growing, when it was darker. And then you, in your mind, you fashioned this picture of seeds sort of slowly growing and germinating, but the point of it would be to come into light again. But now, and for the last centuries, these have become psychological patterns and sociological and political patterns. So it isn't clear anymore that either the light or the dark are necessarily good. They're just different kinds of powers. You can find some of our most timeless sayings reflected in the dynamics of the yin-yang circle. At the top, where the strong forces are at their peak, up here you can think, because you see what's coming next, even if this big bulbous ball doesn't, you see what's coming next and you might think pride goes before a fall. And at the bottom, when it's darkest, you also see what's coming next, and you can think of the saying that it's always darkest just before the dawn of a new sunrise. So this is a dance of life that never ends. I think it's one of the great insights humans have had into who we are and how we work. You experience this rhythm in your own life with its ups and downs. You experience it in your relationships with the give and take, strong and weak moments or periods. It's what Hindus and Buddhists called karma. You do something, it has implications. They lead to something else that have implications, and around you go. All actions have consequences. That's part of the idea of this. It's a dynamic picture. You don't, when you're powerful, when you're up at the top of your power, you don't just get to be a bully, because you're carrying within you the seeds of your own undoing, and the bigger you get, the bigger the seed becomes until finally it begins to sprout and blossom. You can see this everywhere. The fact that actions have consequences, and the consequences are their own undoing. It's a fascinating thing. You can see it in nature. You can see it in nature right now. Just look, to take a different slant on news that we've all read for the last years. We've allowed a very high level of hydrocarbon, fluorocarbon emissions, and so on for years and years to increase the profits of the companies that produce them. We know this stuff. These emissions have led to global warming. We know that. And the global warming has led to many things, including now the melting of the ice caps. We know all this. Where's the seeds of the other side? Well, I read, and some of you read, that many scientists are saying that it's the change in the atmospheric temperatures and pressures and conditions brought about by global warming that are the key cause for the record number of immensely destructive hurricanes that we have. You can't just act. It acts back. Or as a fake butter commercial once put it, it's not nice to fool Mother Nature. And it's also not possible to fool Mother Nature. Sooner or later, it comes back. You can do this, you can see this pattern in a relationship. If you're in a relationship where you're in the yin forces and the dark forces, in other words, not confrontive, more passive, more quiet, more subdued, more withdrawn, and you're simply not dealing with issues that have to be dealt with, those issues you haven't dealt with will start gathering force and steam, and they will become the seed inside of your relationship until finally they erupt and something has to change. You want to see the eruption happen faster? Betray the trust of your partner. And then the seed that comes with the betrayal erupts very soon, and many have been through this. These are the dynamics of life. So this isn't some ancient mythology that's like finding toys in a Cracker Jack box. It's an insight saying that to a lot of people, this is what it looks like life really is like most deeply. Well, if it is, then it is here too. It works the other direction too. If you plant seeds of trust, of empowerment, of compassion, of understanding, that too changes what's going to happen in the dynamics of this. If you take advantage of people, you plant seeds of uprising and vengeance. If you empower and trust and educate people, you raise citizens and neighbors with strong bonds. These aren't just stories. These are wonderful insights. I grew up in such an empowering time in America, and some of the rest of you here did too. Some of the younger people here won't know or maybe care, but after World War II, the GI Bill, which was a marvelous bill, let more Americans go to college than had ever been college educated in our history. The Marshall Plan invested huge sums of money not to stomp to death the people that we just defeated in the war, but to get them back on their feet. Now that's almost unprecedented. Victors using their own money to help the vanquished get back on their feet and retain a sense of dignity as a people. This is what earned America its reputation as the moral leader of the world. The tide's turned now. If you look at circles like this, you say, well, of course the tide's turned. The tide always turns. it's more interesting to see where we are in the cycle and what are the forces acting up now and what are the forces coming up now. But the tide's turned now. How can we be the only developed country that doesn't provide health care for all of its citizens? In the America I grew up in, no one would have believed such a statement. There would have been immense and intense proud rebuttals saying that America is the country in which that could never happen. How can we be arguing? How can we possibly be arguing? Just think about this, as the vice president did this week, for the right to torture prisoners without restraint. What's the picture of America that stands proud in front of? How could leaders lead us into a war by manufacturing claims about weapons of mass destruction that they knew were not true? Links to the 9/11 attacks that they knew were not true? All these actions were strong, but they carry the seeds of their own undoing. You have to feel the seeds of the opposite forces building up as deception builds up. How can leaders ask young soldiers to risk their lives for what amounts to a war of imperialism and greed, and then when the cameras are turned off, vote to cut $25 billion from veterans' benefits? There's something here that betrays the heart of humans and the heart of goodness. Now, you can extend this list of questions as well as I can. You may each have your own 5 or 10 favorites. But these are not voices of life, even though they're strong voices. I think we're in a period of yang, where extremely strong, bright forces have simply defined America. The fact that it's strong doesn't mean it's good, it means that it's strong. But other voices are rising from the little dark seed that's carried inside the ball of arrogance. Now, there'll be a little light seed inside the other ball of arrogance sometime down the path. This time it goes the other way. But there are other voices rising. The indictment this week, the indictment of the Chief of Staff of the Vice President of the United States for lying and obstruction of justice. That's a powerful voice coming from a different center of power than the one that's been rising. Patrick Fitzgerald, the special prosecutor, also had a confidential meeting with President Bush's criminal defense lawyer this week about an undisclosed topic. The media are starting, though I think very weakly, to write more critically of the president, to show him in more awkward poses rather than the staged photo ops. I see this as this little tale of black power, this little tale of yin power starting to get bigger and bigger. Cindy Sheehan's witness had a huge impact, and her impact may continue to grow. I was visited this week by a local woman who won the Best of Austin Award a few weeks ago for her original and clever or quirky idea to put up, at her own expense, billboards of conscience along I-35 in Austin. She wanted to talk to me about a new billboard of conscience that she's thinking of and talk about wording for it, and a billboard that might also be signs that many churches would put in front of their entrances. And the wording that she was talking about was a billboard that simply said, "Thou shalt not torture." That's a new kind of voice that's coming out, and it's coming out with more power than it would have had 2 years ago. The rise of fundamentalism that we read about in the paper is missing the fact that only 21% of Americans attend church regularly at all. 21%. 4 out of 5 don't think religion's interesting enough to get out of bed for on the weekend. We are a far more profoundly secular society than we've been led to believe. That's a different force than we're reading when we read about what a powerful religious nation America is, who God has sent to do notable things in the Mideast. I've been asked to and agreed to speak this Wednesday from the Capitol steps for a group that is part of a national effort to move for the impeachment of President Bush. Does this kind of stuff have a realistic chance? I don't know. I don't have a clue. But it's part of a new kind of energy and a new kind of voice, and it feels right to be part of that new kind of voice. What else has happened? Europe recently rejected the United States' control of the internet. That's huge. It's a first, and it's huge. China holds so much of our debt that they could bankrupt us in a second if they chose to and thought they could find other markets. Citizen groups and lawyers around the country are starting to take on corporations, are starting to take on the question of whether they should have legal personhood. They were only given legal personhood by the citizens. It can be withdrawn, and there are citizen and lawyer groups around the country, especially in California that I've read of, that are starting to take this on. This is energy coming down the other side of the circle. I think the new voices coming up are closer to voices of truth, of compassion, of empowerment, and of justice than the old ones. One of the results of the old voices is coming up for a vote, Proposition 2. I think it'll probably pass by a huge margin. It's passed in about 24 states, and a colleague of mine, when I sent him an email this week, a colleague in Michigan, I sent him an email and I said, Texas is marching forward to regain its crown as the champion of Bubba-dum. And he reminded me that we just can't claim the crown of Bubba-dum because a similar resolution was passed in Michigan by a vote of more than 60%. So that will probably pass by an embarrassing margin. But at least we're just following the parade of bigoted Bubba-dum rather than actually leading it. But I think that the bigotry and the hatred that have fueled bills like Proposition 2 absolutely carry within them the seeds of their own destruction. Most people are good. Most people have good hearts. Most people are more compassionate than hateful. And those voices are being raised. All these voices being raised that come from the little seed of circle inside of the ball of arrogance. Now, if I were a Republican, I could have pointed to times when the left was in control, when the exact opposite was happening. But now it's happening this way. You'll hear voices like that, of voices striving for truth, for more openness, for compassion. You'll hear them in this church in as many ways as we can manage. You heard the voices singing out today through the piece that the choir sang, the wonderful piece from Sweet Honey in the Rock. So I'm optimistic this Halloween. I think we see the signs of turning toward a more honest, healthy, and empowering direction that we've needed for a long time, maybe 25 years, maybe more. It's almost impossible to kill the human spirit. Life is just profoundly good, and that goodness may start to define us more and more in the near future. People are still falling in love. Parents are still having children and excited by their coming and their being. And while it's easy to blame the government, the overwhelming number of people who work for the government are good people who went to work there because they wanted to make a positive difference, not a negative one. Remember, Patrick Fitzgerald works for the government too. The beauty of the universe isn't playing to a passive audience. It's an interactive game, and we're all part of it, each in our own small but important way. Halloween's about bringing the shadow sides up to the surface to restore balance. Usually those forces are scary, and so usually we have spooky Halloweens. But the point isn't really to scare us, it's to help integrate us and help us become more authentic people. Because an authentic person rejuvenates the world. It may be the only thing that can. So I hate to risk upsetting you with this big bunch of optimism. But I'm optimistic. Happy Halloween.